The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
A numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin. Made my little on-the-break bet. I remembered to bet Kyle Larson.
Nice.
By the way.
Did you bet it twice?
So here's the thing. This is what's interesting about this. The reason I asked you, do you bet at one of the books that's available here to us in town?
Very glad you brought this up because I didn't know where you were going with this. Yes, all the time.
So I had a little 25% profit boost thing just sitting in there. And so my 18-1 on Kyle Larson became 22.5-1.
Yeah. MGM does a great job with those.
So books, I'm getting 22.5-1 on a guy that is available 18-1 everywhere across the entire market. I looked at every single book.
There you go. They, look, this is one of those, doesn't matter how much you bet, how little you bet, right? Like there are certain books that what if they're going to give you the no sweat bets, free bets, like use them on something. Right. And then the boost. Yeah. I mean, you are talking about the one book in Vegas, at least, that will regularly give you multiple types of boosts. So, gotta check it out.
It's a $50 max, but I mean, I'm taking an 18-1 and making it a 22.5-1.
Yeah.
And honestly, I know nothing about NASCAR. I'm not betting, probably not betting more than $50 on an outright anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, you know?
It's an easy decision. Yeah.
Yeah. So there it is.
Boom. And
22.5-1, Kyle Larson.
Ty's paying full in golf there too, which is good to know.
There it is. So I'm in on that. Put a bow here on the NL Central. Like I said, I do have a Pirates win total bet over. The pitching staff is very good. I believe that the additions to the lineup is going to be enough to get this team pretty close to 500. So I do like the over on that 76.5 that you can find out there. The Reds are an interesting case here. Like I said, the +370. I've bet this team the last 2 years to win this division and have not gotten over the hump. This is probably the best version of them. So if I pass on them, I think I would have so much regret if they did win this division, because I think it's the best version of the years that I would have bet them to win this division. So I will say that is at least pending. I don't know if it will be a two make the playoffs, yes, or just an over on the win total, or if I just go ahead and say, let's go ahead and play them +370 to win the division. So there's something going in there on the Reds. Cubs are too short for me. I know why everyone loves them. I believe that they're going to be very good. But in a division, I think it'll be super competitive. +120, just not enough.
Win totals almost tell you that, right? This is going to be a bunch division. It's where they're expecting the wins to be. Do you agree with what we've heard the past couple days, second best team in the National League, do you?
I don't know. I think the upside is certainly there for them. I'll put it this way. So the projection systems out there are kind of all over the place with the Cubs, to kind of let you know just the polarizing opinions on what the peak is for them. So there are four that are kind of that everybody looks at. There's like the Davenport, Pecota, Fangraphs puts out theirs. There's Oopsie that has come out now that everybody uses.
Okay.
Even the Bat is one. Derek Carty, I know we've had him on the network a few different times. So the Cubs, Davenport at 83.5, at 83, Pecota at 90.5. So you can see a 6-7.5 win difference between Davenport and Pecota. Fangraphs has them at 85.9, the Bat at 87.4, and then Oopsie down at 83.7. So again, we have two at 83 and change, all the way up to as high as 90.5 here on the Cubs team. So that's kind of the difference. You don't really see that type of dispersion between the different projection systems out there very often, but that does let you know kind of the polarizing nature of this Cubs team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possible wide-ranging down outcomes that they could have.
So that one for me, Milwaukee is pretty steady pretty steady as an under team from the projection systems. I mean, as we're sitting here at 84.5, Davenport at 81, Pecota 80.5, Fangraphs at 82. The only one that has them over is Oopsie at 85.2, but you can see that's only a half game, you know, that they have them over. So projection system's not as high on the Brewers as the market currently.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I like it.
So anyway, that's how I would go about betting this one. Like I said, I will probably end up on some sort of Reds deal. I might play them to the absolute peak of their tail, which would just be win the division, win the NL, maybe even a tiny sprinkle in the World Series, which is never going to happen with the Dodgers being in existence.
But. Brewers of those four, you believe the least in?
The one that I certainly do not feel is worthy of a bet.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't have that big of a separation between them and the Reds, and the Reds are plus 370 and they're 220, which to me is just unbettable.
Yeah, and then we went over Cubs, right? But probably most likely to win division, but you could also see a way worse outcomes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so move on here to the AFC North, a division that is, I'm sure, going to have a ton of different debate going on here because you have the Ravens and the Bengals at the top. Then you have the Browns at the bottom for sure. And then you have the Steelers somewhere in the middle where we don't really know right now what's going on. I expect Aaron Rodgers to retire, but he might not. He could come back and be mediocre again. He could come back and be average yet again, or they're going to be in the quarterback market trying to find somebody else. I doubt they want to just go into the season with Mason Rudolph. They've kind of tried that multiple different times, and it hasn't worked out. There's really no upside.
Feels like for two decades he's
there's
been
just no upside.
Yeah,
right?
There's none, yeah.
How... I'm glad that you just said
that.
Do
you want me to look it up?
How old is Mason Rudolph? Because he's the oldest, whatever number you're about to say right
30.
Now. He's the oldest 30-year-old there has ever been in the history of the NFL.
He's been on the Steelers for 26 years at this point. It's incredible.
The guy is 54 years old. I don't care. Let's go. He's Danny Almonte. I'm telling you right now. There's just no way that he's 30 years old. But I don't think they want to go into the season with him. So if Aaron Rodgers does retire, they'll be in kind of a quarterback conversation. One of these free agents, one of these dudes that maybe you try to trade for or whatever. I mean, it's a shame that the 49ers are kind of digging in saying they're not going to trade Mac Jones because, you know, that would be a spot for him to go in. He would start. He's, in my opinion, probably better than Aaron Rodgers is at this point in his career.
Probably.
You know, at this point in his career. And that would probably keep them at least on their winning ways. But maybe if you're maybe for the Steelers, maybe you do what we're just talking about with the Cardinals, right? You said the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, if you're the Steelers, maybe you need to be the Cardinals and realize we're not going to win right now as currently constructed, and we might need to break this thing down to build it back up.
Yeah, very, very much so. And look, Steelers.
That's why I have no interest in betting anything on this team. Nothing. Yeah. Like zero interest. If that division number could be 6.5 to 1, and I would not be interested.
The other part I was just going to bring up with it is just the. I think there's a lot of look, it's great that we have all these odds early. It's fun. Me and Matt love talking NFL.
Minus 110 Ravens, plus 230 Bengals, plus 450 Steelers, 12-1 Browns for the radio people.
Yeah, good job. We love talking all this stuff as soon as it becomes available. And yes, there are some bets that present themselves. I don't know how you do anything with the Steelers, positively or negatively, until you figure out what the quarterback situation is going to look like a little bit closer.
Yeah, I mean, there is a world that exists where if Aaron Rodgers retires and they can't get anybody in free agency, that they're way closer to the Browns than they are the Ravens and Bengals.
Oh yeah.
Like it, because if you're going into the season with Mason Rudolph,
I think they already are anyways.
If you're going into the season with Mason Rudolph, you pretty much know what your ceiling is. Like your ceiling is defined, which is you're praying to go 500. And here's the problem. You go 500 again, and then you get another middling pick and you can't do anything to alter the franchise. And it's just repeat process, right?
Yeah. The worst place you can be is in the middle. And it is you'd almost like to see them start angling that way.
Yeah.
If you don't, now the problem is, you know, kind of transition to this, the other teams. I'm not exactly sold. Like if you're a Steelers fan, Steelers backer back there, I actually lean a little bit more towards Rodgers coming back, but I do think it's very up in the air. But okay, let's say you're a big Rodgers fan, big Steelers fan. Rodgers comes back. Bengals have had their issues over the years, especially with staying healthy. I have no idea I don't know exactly what to expect from this Ravens team. I'm not running to lay minus 110.
Absolutely not.
Like
I think it's the worst futures. I think it's the worst odds
out there
attached to a team.
Yeah.
That there is in the division.
I agree. I think it's a terrible number, not something I could bet right now. My point is, though, is I think they're outside of Cleveland. In theory, this division could still go a lot of ways. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw bad Ravens like we saw last year, that we see that carry over a little bit this season. And if the Bengals have more injuries on the offensive side of the ball and that defense still hasn't gotten any better, I can't sit here and say the Steelers definitely can't make that jump.
No, I mean
we saw it last year.
And this has absolutely nothing to do. It's a running joke around here, right? Because I went to LSU and Joe Burrow did and all the stuff and brought us the greatest college football offense.
You're in love with him and Jamar Chase and the Bengals.
But what I will say, though, at this number, they're the only team you would feel comfortable betting.
Yes, correct.
I mean, like, the Browns are never winning this division.
Browns aren't winning, and I got too many questions right now with the Ravens and Steelers and what their offseason's going to look.
So the only number to bet is the +230 on Cincinnati. At least with Cincinnati, you have the most important questions answered, which is you have a great quarterback, and you have weapons for him to throw to, which you can't say about the Ravens. The thing about the Ravens is you got a good quarterback, we think, but he does not. He doesn't even have a one, much less two different guys that he can go to, whereas Joe Burrow definitely does with Cincinnati, and you have to assume that they are going to spend the bulk of their draft capital and stuff in the offseason on the defense because you just – he was scoring 30 points way too many times and losing games.
I think it's a good betting lesson for right now. So it's awesome that we've had these books releasing so many markets early. It's just identifying what's – what could be a good bet now? What teams do you need to wait on to see what happens more this offseason? And it's a long time before we kick off week one, right? And these different teams, I think, are going to require different waiting periods. Some might be good to fire on now, but it kind of goes back. We were talking AFC East yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Bills, the Patriots, you kind of know a little bit of what they're going to look like and what they're going to try to do this offseason, what you can kind of expect to see out of them this offseason. If you have a lot of conviction there, go for it. If you have a lot of conviction on the Bengals, go for it. I would expect this number to only get worse from here.
Yeah, and I do believe what you say, though. I think that +450 on the Steelers is assuming that Rodgers is coming back. I can't imagine it's that number.
Yeah, good point.
Thinking that he is going to be out. They're about to tee it up at Pebble Beach here in about a half an hour for round number two. We'll give you our round one thoughts and any bets in our account as we head into Friday.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is a numbers game here on VSiN, the sports betting network. As we get ready for some golf talk here, we are heading into round number two. Remember, this is a no-cut event, so we're not sweating a cut here on Friday like we normally would at a lot of these other tournaments. The weather report, the beautiful weather report that the PGA Tour puts out, just came out, Kelly Bidlin. I mean, look at that. I mean, that is a damn fine graphic.
Is this your first year noticing this?
No, but it's just that they do it, write it, you know? Like it's
no,
just
you're right. The timing is
right
well
on time.
Done.
It's
yes.
Right, whatever. It's always so incredibly beautiful. Anyway, no chance of rain at all today. It is going to be pretty cloudy skies out there. And as, like we saw yesterday, the wind, by the way, they were right. It did start to pick up a little bit in the afternoon.
It did.
Kind of they're saying the same thing again here today. So we're going to be in that like 5 to 10 mile an hour range for the first half of the day. And then, Kelly, we get into the gusts. While the sustained winds aren't going to get into the danger zone, the highest range they have on here is about 14 miles an hour, which is nothing we're really all that worried about. We do kind of get back up into that like 20 to 22 mile an hour gusts stuff again in the afternoon. So some of the people on the PM tee times could at least see some of their stuff getting messed with a little bit, whereas we did not see that at all in the morning, but we did start to see that a little bit as the day wore on yesterday.
Yeah, it was Scott Scheffler's post-round interview, and it's there's some guys that you get a lot of boring interviews on golf, right? And you're trying to learn some things from. I love the post round interviews. You try to learn, right? If whatever from whoever they're talking to about the course, about the conditions. I thought it was interesting because Scotty, I know he had a tough round yesterday, but the guy still rarely complains about anything outside of his game. And he wasn't complaining, but he brought up, and I thought it was significant that he brought up the wind definitely changing and feeling it more later in his round and in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we do when we finish up too is just, well, at least the very first thing I do is just look for outliers and see if there's anything that I can do and go and tackle. Now, if you listen to Long Shots, if you listen to us here, you know, I have a bet on Ryo Hosatsune. That being said, he gained 5.12 strokes putting yesterday.
It's got to be his best round ever.
It's just, you know, The same could be said for Sam Burns, who gained 5.16 strokes.
But at least a well-known good putter.
Yeah, putting yesterday. It's just those.
Oh my God.
Those rounds are just not going to be repeated very often, you know? And so you look at this, and I'll let you read the tweet that we got from Justin Ray yesterday. But like the stuff that I go in and the very first thing I do is look for putting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing that I look for is the off the tee stuff. Cause if a guy is typically okay off the tee and just had a bad round, was just spraying it for whatever, you get the yips sometimes,
right?
And whatever, you know, then I will give him the benefit of the doubt with that, and like kind of look to back him as a, whatever. But like the putting stuff, I look to fade more times than not, because that is just so incredibly variant. Mm-hmm. And even more variant on these Poa greens, that like the difference between making and missing a putt. I mean, Hideki made a 42-foot putt yesterday that I watched like go from inside to outside the cup, because right. It had hit like two different bumps along the way. And like, if you don't hit the right side of the bump, then he's going to miss it for sure. But it happened to hit the right side of the bump and it went in. So it's just, it's especially on these greens, there's so much variability to that, that like you can't repeat that.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, look, it's something we talk about. Yeah. For anybody who listens to Long Shots, we talk about it a lot. Just entering the season and before tournaments. And it's why, I think for me and Matt, we both dialed at most courses. I'm not going to say this is everywhere, but a lot of courses, putting is dialed down a lot because of the variant nature of it, and just the wildly different outcomes that you can see. And again, some guys are naturally better putters than others. Sam Burns being up there. Now, the numbers he put up, yes, are going to be tough to repeat. It's over 5 strokes gained with the putter.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough for anybody, yes. Right? But at least he's a well-known good putter. Now, the next guy's on the list, Ryo Satsune, it's been well documented. That is still with the club he's struggling with a bit, despite the great start to the season here. Tony Finau is next on the list. He gained 4.87 strokes with the putter in round one. That is something that I would not expect at all to see again here the rest of the weekend. So, yeah, very similar to what you're saying. That's usually if I'm doing any in tournament betting, especially with matchups, right? Looking to attack that very next round is usually that's what I'm looking to go against. Guys like that. And I will just add, Justin Ray had tweeted yesterday, there were well over 300,000 rounds measured by ShotLink since 2004. Ryo Satsune today is the only player in that group to lose strokes to the field off the tee, on approach, and still shoot 62 or lower.
Yeah.
That is really hard to do.
Which lets you know you putted the lights out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, if you do what you did again, it's going to be unsustainable,
yep.
Right? Like, you're just not going to make, I think at one point I think I heard him say on the broadcast, he had made 149 feet of putts or something like that, you know, just something insane. And so
kids having a hell of a season though. I'll give him that. This is someone that was on our radar last
Look,
year.
Buddy,
was
fall back, but don't fall back outside the top 20. Right. That's all I'm saying. Fall back, but don't fall back outside the top 20. That would cost us here. You can see the odds if you're watching at home, the live odds, 12-1 on Ryo. You got a little under 10-1 on Sam Burns. Keegan sitting there at +820, 29-1 on Finau. And, you know, again, you're going to go, wait. He's only one shot off the lead. How can he be 29-1? One, he has been in terrible form. Yeah. Two, he has one of the worst profiles of anybody, because he lost 1.21 off the tee, which, by the way, that's almost the only thing he does good these days. And putted at a 4.87 plus. That is a very bad recipe for Tony Finau.
Nick Taylor, also ridiculous putting numbers. Yeah. The one that I will never talk negatively about Nick Taylor again, though, Matt. This is, you go back the past 2 years on tour, if you bet outrights on every single human being, you would have lost money at every tournament they teed up. You would have lost money on everybody except for two golfers, Scottie Scheffler and Nick Taylor. A lot of that has to do with the odds, because Nick Taylor wins at like 110-1. It's wild. Well, so I won't go crazy about him.
Is this somebody like trying to let us know that they're really on Akshay Bhatia? Akshay Bhatia, period. All right? Like that's who's winning this. Akshay Bhatia, period.
End of conversation.
End of conversation.
I'm kind of laughing at Tom Hoagie, former winner here. This is speaking, Matt just brought up with form and like where Tony Finau's at in his game. Tom Hoagie, former winner at this tournament, 3 shots off the lead and 72-1 you could still get him at.
Yeah, so...
Attention, Will Hill, because I know he loves Tom Hoagie.
Yeah, so some of the outliers, just, again, you have time to get in if you want to do any of this stuff. We mentioned Burns, we mentioned Hisatsune, we mentioned Finau, you mentioned Taylor. Denny McCarthy is the only guy...
Great putter.
...that I'm not going... Listen, I would say he's the only guy that I'm not going to... He gained 3 strokes putting, but, like, he's the only reason he's on tour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't do anything else for well. So it's like... I'm not going to do that, but
Knapp and Fitz could continue.
If you get to Jordan Spieth, Jake Knapp, Sammy Valimaki, Alex Noren, these are all guys that gained over 2 strokes putting yesterday on the round. So again, if you want to, perhaps if you find anything attractive about trying to fade those guys, some of the dudes on approach that just went nuts, but you can't really fade Goddard at all. Shane Lowry is always a good approach player, as is Hoagie, Morikawa. These are all dudes that are just like finally getting maybe back into form a little bit when it comes to, like, Morikawa was off for a while there. Lowry, you know, had been off, but maybe these dudes are getting back to what we know and love about them. I didn't find anything in the approach numbers that really threw me for a loop, at least guys from on the positive side. On the negative side, I mean,
well, that's what I look at.
I think Ludwig might be. I think Ludwig might be broken.
Yeah, he is. You can't speak yet. You got to stay away from him right now.
The only one that really kind of came out to me, and maybe I was looking through my betting eyes at this, but like Ryan Gerard is good on approach, and he was bad yesterday. Ben Griffin is good on approach. He was bad yesterday.
I'll excuse the Gerard one just because he's still a bit of a newer, younger guy coming up, right? He still had good finishes already this year, multiple T2s. You're allowed to have a bad week, Ryan.
And, you know, again, Ben Griffin, another guy that, like, typically pretty good on approach. And, like, honestly, if you look at Ben Griffin's round, could have been something special because he's actually, you know, when we run the models, he's one of the best par five guys.
Yeah.
That was on tour all of last year. He bogeyed 14 and then doubled 18. That is 3 over on 2 of the par fives. And he still was 2 under for the day.
Wait, what is this? Yeah. Sorry, I'm distracted here. Scottie Scheffler with the 8th worst.
Yeah.
In the field, I think that's 8th worst on approach in the field yesterday. Holy hell, that is not something you see.
Now that is an outlier.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. But I mean,
Do you make anything out of that though? I caught a couple people like, okay, we saw the amazing surge back last week. Do you think there's equipment change issues or anything like that going on with him beginning of the year that he's just needing some time to figure this out? I mean, this is 2 weeks in a row of just awful first rounds.
So I do.
And I don't know what to read into that. I don't.
Yeah, I do know. I do know that he had moved back to the driver that he was playing last year.
Yep.
I don't know about the irons though.
But then I heard him post round yesterday talking about how someone asked him what he was hitting on certain holes, right? And he was talking about hitting 3 wood and saying in the past he would usually bust out driver here and kind of skirted the question like, "Yeah, I'm not using it as much now."
When we get back, let's talk a little college baseball. Matt Grissom.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin want to get in again. They're going to tee off here in about 15 minutes. I did say that I had 3 head-to-heads that I played. Kelly Bidlin, your quick thoughts.
3.
I played Pearson Cootie over Hisatsune. I played Siwoo over J.J. Spawn. And I played Ben Griffin over Shane Lowry. Like I said, the Ben Griffin thing really stood out. So he was 3 over on those 2 par 5s. If he even just pars those par fives, which by the way played under par, I mean they were like the easiest holes in the course. We're talking about a 5 under round for Ben Griffin. If he birdies them, which again a lot of the people did, you know, now we're talking more like a 6 or 7 under round for Ben Griffin, as opposed to where he bogeys and then doubles one of the other ones. And so I think that comes back around. So Cootie over Hisatsune. He just can't putt like he just can't putt like he did yesterday.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. He's been good, but I hear you. Those putting numbers are just huge. And yeah, I'm on Pearson Cootie this week anyway, so yeah, it's hard for me to disagree with that.
Siwoo over JJ Spawn. I think JJ's broken too.
Where'd you get that one at? I think that's one. That one I'm tailing you on.
Cesars.
Okay, yeah, I got one. I'm tailing you on.
That is Cesars, and then Ben Griffin over Shane Lowry.
I mean, speaking of guys, Rios had a couple great tournaments here. Siwoo Kim has just, this is round after round, week after week. You know, Sundays have been painful, but, you know, the Siwoo putting experience is an experience.
Yeah, so just those are all three head-to-heads that I'm on here on a Friday. But remember, as we said, like, there is no cut here in this. And so, you know, Kelly, I don't know what you think about this, but
Scotty Scheffler's definitely not out.
Right? I mean, well, so here's the pin placements before we get to Matt, just so that y'all can remember. The pin placements to yesterday and today
same,
are
right?
going to be much easier than on the weekend when the amateurs are gone.
Right.
So these dudes that are at the top of the leaderboard, when things get a little bit more difficult, might find things to be a little bit more difficult. So just, I don't think this is over by any stretch with any of these dudes that are in the top. I think if anybody, for me, I'd feel comfortable. If you're a couple under par right now, I feel okay with that, especially if the winds pick up over the weekend.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I've got some guys that are like three under. I don't think they're out of it at all. Anyways, I don't think we hit the outright odds. Any surprise, my boy Keegan? I feel like this is long shots again. You're like, how am I the one on Berger? Keegan's +820 and your favorite? I don't know that I'd have him as your favorite. I'm the biggest Keegan Bradley guy on the planet. Goddard's +930 is behind him. Sam Burns +980. And then Rio 12-1. Fitz then down at like 17-1. Everybody else longer than that.
Let's get to Matt Grissom here, collegebaseballinsiders.com, at Grissom on X. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
We are doing really, really good. I need to, first and foremost, I got a bone to pick with you because I do have your plays and picks and thoughts here for the season in this rundown. And I do not see my LSU Tigers anywhere on this list, and I need to know what's going on with that.
Well, not since 2018 has the defending national champ gone back to Omaha. So I don't think that streak is broken with the Tigers, although they're going to be a force to reckon with. But as I'm joined here by another college baseball guy that's familiar with the VSiN network, Mr. Ben Wilson.
Wow.
As he gets ready to call the game on Flow Baseball, $29.99, you can purchase that. Watch great baseball for the next 3 weeks. He said he was going to do that. I didn't know if he was being truthful or not, but there you go. You get a live appearance by the Ben Wilson.
Wow.
LSU.
He means Ben_Wilson_1_Wilson
on Twitter,
or whatever. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
See his family in the country club at Oakland.
As Gil Alexander would put, the one guy at VSiN that's destined for great things.
That's why we got to bring him back. We got to bring him back down to earth when me and Matt are just doing the show. That's
it's pretty
sure.
easy to be destined for great things whenever you started with a bank account of $25 million. So, I mean, you know.
Oh, man. Matt, what games are you watching today? Who are you kind of most interested in seeing in action this afternoon?
The best game, in my opinion, today is going to be Vanderbilt TCU. That's at 3 o'clock Central Time here at Globe Life. We start the day with Oklahoma and Texas Tech. That's going to be anything but a pitcher's duel. Cameron Johnson's decent for Oklahoma, but Texas Tech hasn't had a good pitching staff in years. And unfortunately for Tim Tadlock, I think Tech is going to be in for another long season. I expect a lot of runs in this one. But the 3 o'clock game, complete opposite. You've got a great matchup on the mound with Connor Fennell and Tommy Lepore for TCU. They're two completely different style pitchers. Connor Fennell's not going to zip a 100-mile-per-hour fastball by you, but he's got a lot of breaking ball stuff. He's really relying on his changeup slider mix, but 88-mile-per-hour fastball, again, not going to jump off the page at you, but I think this is going to be a lower scoring game. TCU getting plus money right now, I find that pretty odd considering TCU is everybody's kind of darling to make the College World Series. So I'll ride with the dog here with TCU and hope that Tommy Lepore can get 5 or 6 innings in deep and keep this Vanderbilt offense at bay, which they've been for the better part of the last half decade for Tim Corbin. They've really struggled to put up runs.
Matt, you got a couple favorites on the card as well. Kansas State over Iowa and Arizona over Stanford.
Yeah, Iowa's got the better pitcher starting, but in Tyler Guerin, and this Kansas State offense, I feel like, is just in a better place. Iowa used to be a gauntlet for a really good pitching staff. We'll see what that bodes for them this year. But I think D. Kennedy coming back, really anchoring that offense. Kansas State should be able to outscore Iowa. They're another offense that's not going to jump off the page and put up a lot of runs. So give me Kansas State at the short price. And then Arizona, minus 160. They're tied with TCU as the short shot to win the Big 12. Got a really good punch with Smith Bailey and Owen Kremkowski. Trying to remember all these names is
new
is
season,
tough,
man. It's okay.
Baseball
yeah.
has some of the hardest names ever to pronounce as well. But Owen Kremkowski going for Arizona today. They did lose their stopper of the year in Tony Pluta, the closer. But I still think this Wildcats team is live to win anything. And in college baseball, you have to lay a lot of juice. It's typically a very favorite-ridden handicap. So minus 160, I feel like, is fair when you look across the landscape of all the day one bets you could make. A lot of these favorites are minus 200 plus. So you got to find your spots where you can get them.
Matt, I know you got a bunch of futures loaded up. Just real quick for anybody out there, the Diamond Report, the preview guide that Matt and his team have put together for this season is awesome. I was scrolling through that the other day. TheDiamondReport.com, where you can go get it. Matt, I know, let's start with the futures. SEC at the top, no shocker to see there. Arkansas, Texas, what do you like about these teams, and how far do you think these guys can go?
Yeah, Jeff Davis not giving the Razorbacks much credit. They're about 11 to 1 everywhere else. You see the odds on the screen there. Circus Sports has them plus 1650. I feel like that's a steal considering Dave Van Horn is consistently rumored to be in that Omaha mix every year. He's not finished worse than 18 and 12 in the SEC over the last 5 years. And we saw him last year in Omaha, you know, a ball to left field kept them from beating LSU, forcing an elimination game, and LSU ended up going on to win the College World Series against Coastal, as we know. Congratulations, Matt. But I think this year it's the same story for Arkansas. It's pitching staff, pitching staff, pitching staff. And the offense is made up of a lot of portal guys mixed with guys that returned. So I think Arkansas is just as alive as anybody. Plus, they get a very favorable SEC schedule. They dodge Tennessee, LSU, and I believe Texas. So you're looking at a spot where they're going to be in the national seed if they just do the bare minimum that he's done year in and year out in the SEC. And then Texas with Luke Harrison and Dylan Volantis, they've got a true 1-2 punch there. Ruger Rojas, another arm out of that starting rotation that's going to be good. They dove into the transfer portal. They got Carson Tinney, the really good catcher out of Notre Dame. And I think this Texas team at 17-1 is a steal. They won the SEC outright last year. I think Jim Schlossnagel has proven time and time again that he's going to have his guys ready for an Omaha run. And, you know, we saw him at Texas A&M a couple years ago take Tennessee to the wire before the Vols ended up winning. And then I've got some longer shots, Oregon State, Florida, TCU. I also like them to make the College World Series. That's a little less of a payout, but you're talking about the top eight at that point. Oregon State has a really good sophomore returning in Dax Whitney, Ethan Kleinschmidt also with another great pitching staff there. And then Florida, that line on Florida is just wild. If Kevin O'Sullivan can get to a super regional, he is 9-1 in super regionals. So basically just go ahead and sharpie them in super regional to Omaha. And then Florida TCU, or I'm sorry, Oregon State TCU, both just, they're going to be really good this year. It's just a matter of winning and getting hot at the right time and make that final push to Omaha. But I think they can both do it.
He is Matt Grissom, collegebaseballinsiders.com, at Grissom on X. You and I are going to have a little Arkansas LSU bet on the side here. And make Ben Wilson pull that black card out whenever you're up there, buddy. Have him pay for everything. Appreciate the time and good luck.
Thanks, guys.
We'll be right back.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin here with me as we get some college baseball talk in.
Get it going. It's a party down there.
I thought
man.
There was a typo when I didn't see LSU on the list there, but you know,
the first
there was Arkansas, and he may or may not be from Arkansas. There might be a little homerism going on there
as well.
There's
usually a fair amount of SEC love on the Grissom bets, too. I know the SEC kind of dominates college baseball, but still. It was my first joke to him, too, when he sent bets in yesterday. I was like, your Florida seems to be missing a state at the end of it. I don't know if I could punch this into a graphic.
It's one of those things, though. You know, it's warm. It's warmer. In the South,
yeah.
than it is everywhere else.
Facts.
And so, like, I mean, if you're sitting here, we're starting the baseball season right now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
We got a photo yesterday of someone whose two cars were buried under 3 feet of snow.
Well, that's from Fred Currier, and Fred lives at, like, I don't know. See, I think he just goes from Buffalo to Canada, and he's cleaning up snow everywhere.
But you get what I'm saying. It's like, it's very hard for East Coast teams to be good because it's freezing cold.
Well, how does this work? Because I've seen this down in Florida, right? It's like Rutgers baseball will play like a month and a half straight right down yeah. south. Yeah. That's what they have to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like all road games all the time.
Yeah, fun.
So just tough. It's just tough to compete. You
then,
know?
Then you come back to those like weird turf fields. It was like the turf fields with like the where they make the like the dirt paths, right? But it's still just not dirt. It's like just turf.
Yeah, it's you know, it seems like it's always going to be like SEC and West Coast bias, but it's mainly because they're warmer weather, and with that you can get in more work, you get in better player. But I mean, players don't want to go where it's snowing when the season starts.
And they probably played more baseball down south growing up. I mean, then seriously,
all the stuff, yeah,
all that stuff. And then seriously, the travel schedules, right? Like it is
why there's no Louisiana and Texas hockey players. You know, there's no hockey players out of Texas and Louisiana and Alabama and stuff.
Same
you know?
Sort of thing. All right, we get a couple tweets here, Matt. I want to catch up on this one from Dan Groeschel. You know who isn't drinking beer or stealing food from the family suite? Our future MVP, Cade Cunningham.
Yes.
So Dan's rooting away. There we go, Dan. We'll get Cade home. That would be good. I like this one from Coach Ariel. Serious question. We were talking about the AFC North earlier. Serious question. Who is the best offensive mind in the AFC North? Isn't it Todd Monken? With him and two stars on defense and two first-rounders, why can't the Browns win the division? 10 won it in 2025.
Because of the quarterback position is the very short of it. Like, the short of it is because they are going to start Shedeur Sanders at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. I think my first thought, Harry, great point. We just brought up, I think there is going to be some surprise. It wouldn't shock me if there's some surprises in the AFC.
Also, one other thing, too, about that team is it is not the Browns' offensive line of old. So the Browns' offensive line for several years was one of the strengths of that team. And so no matter who you put behind there, at least you knew they were going to have protection, right? This version of this offensive line, one, it's older, and not only is it older, it is starting to kind of fall off of a cliff. I mean, Cam Robinson at left tackle had his worst season ever as a pro, and I don't know if it's going to get any better, right?
How many teams was he on last year?
And so you start to look, and like some of these dudes are just getting up there in age, and you just decline, you know, the older you get. And so not only do you have a bad quarterback, but you also have an offensive line that isn't near what it used to be.
Also, I get the point on the offensive mind, right? You know who the best offensive mind is in that division? Joe Burrow.
Yeah, probably.
That's probably the best offensive mind. I'm not going to sit here and defend some of the other coaches in the division. I get your point, Harry. But yeah, that was my first thought.
Yeah, I mean, and the defense will probably keep them from getting just completely blown out of games. But I don't know if we went through this with Myles Garrett last year. It wouldn't surprise me if we start to hear rumors coming up as we approach the draft about him getting moved. He wanted out of there. They paid him the bag. The team's terrible. It wouldn't surprise me if he kind of goes back to him and said, oh man, I messed up. I messed up.
Yeah.
I actually, I understand I've only got like two or three good years left, And I would really like to go compete somewhere.
I mean, obviously he's a better player, but isn't it the same kind of conversation as Max Crosby, right? Like, it's just these teams need to rebuild, need to get better. You can get stuff for these types of players that can help you build forward. And I mean, isn't the Browns season a year ago just the perfect example? Like, this is, yeah, your defense can be that good. You can win two awards. Myles Garrett can be that good of a pass rusher. And where does it get you? Where does it get you at the end of the day?
No,
it's not taking you anywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it is a fair point, but the point to me is that the most important position in all of sports is by far your weakest spot, and that's never a good place to be.
And if Myles Garrett was on the block, though, oh, boy.
Myles Garrett might be better playing quarterback than Shador Sanders. Who knows?
Myles Garrett for Giannis. Let's make it happen right now and get this over with.
Yeah. Let's just get all these superstars moving. Cross sport. Like, all the different ways that we can do that. Guys, if you hadn't checked out sharpplays.com, do it today. Been around since 2011. Free daily reports, real-time alerts, public logs, and transparent receipts over there. They're trusted by the pros and monitored by the books. Sharpplays.com. So we are on a break here in all the sports, and so the three-point competition will be happening on All-Star Weekend, which to me is the only thing I care about.
I'm pumped. I love it.
The dunk competition is now made up of people you don't really know.
It's
because you... It's too much for these other guys to go out there and do that and take the chance on any sort of weird injury or risk or whatever. So gone are the days of people jumping over Kias.
Do you have a problem with that?
No.
Okay.
No. Because here's the thing. The kid in me would have a problem with it.
Yeah.
The older me that understands the financials of everything, mm-hmm, and the business aspect of this, that if my star player went out, and let's just say, like, best case scenario, high ankle sprained because he was doing some crazy dunk and landed funny. Worst case scenario, Achilles, ACL or something or whatever.
Right.
I would be, like, losing my mind.
I think absolutely, and I agree with you to a degree.
Because with these dunks, you were asking your body to do something that even these dudes don't do very often, yeah, right? Like, yeah, they are trying to perform acts that they do not do in regular games that probably
are maxing out their athletic abilities. Yeah. No, I hear you. I think what makes it easier, I think it's a very, very easy slippery slope, right? Cause it's I think there are probably some stars that if you saw, and this is where a lot of people brought this up. If you saw a bunch of stars commit, I think the competitive nature in some people would say, well, if these guys are doing it, then I'm doing it, right? But the problem is once that starts, and this is what we've seen over the past 10 years, when less and less and less stars want to compete, I think it makes it way easier to fall back on that reasoning and say, you know what, I'm just skipping this.
So let's get to the three-point contest here. Again, the only thing that is actually fun on All-Star Weekend. And how about the rookie coming in as the short shot?
That is pretty awesome. It's pretty badass.
Konkanepal there at 3:30. Your second shot is the guy that's not even playing this year.
He's not even playing.
Damian Lillard at +410. Devin Booker, 550. Jamal Murray, 6-1, as is Tyrese Maxey. Donovan Mitchell, 650. Norm Powell, 10-1. And then Bobby Portis way out at 17-1. If you have not watched Khan shoot, Khan is so pure.
Yes, he good.
It is ridiculous watching him shoot the basketball, but obviously all of these dudes in their own right, very, very good shooters. Do you buy into the narrative of Damian Lillard coming out?
Oh man, I love this conversation.
He's had nothing better to do than shoot threes.
Okay, so there's two sides of this, right? The guy's not healthy. He's not playing basketball. He is way out of his normal daily basketball routine, right? True. What's also true is the man clearly is competing this. He's clearly good enough to be shooting a basketball.
Yeah.
He's been doing that. So are you more scared of Damian Lillard in NBA shape or the Damian Lillard who's been sitting at home in his mansion in Portland with his own basketball court getting up God knows how many shots a day because it's the only thing that he can do from an athletic standpoint now?
This is why I'm buying in on Lillard here is because
I don't have a problem with it at all.
If you go and anybody that's ever watched any of these retired NBA guys and they put on about 30 pounds and like all stuff, but like, they put up a shot and it still just looks so pure. So this guy is still going to play basketball. And yes, he's rehabbing and doing all that. But Kelly, like you just said, it wouldn't surprise me if he shoots 200 threes a day, because it's just undefended spot up, like whatever. Like,
he's bored. He can't do anything else with the basket. Yeah. He's just going to shoot. So look, I might end up on him as well. I've got a big I haven't decided there. Let me throw out a few other that I am looking at. I am going to, I just went over wide open shooting stats in the NBA. Okay. Tyrese Maxey has the most makes per game. He's making two on over five looks a game from that. Is wide open 6 foot of 6 feet away is the closest defender. He's 40.5%. Jamal Murray, 1.5 makes per game on 3.1 assists, 47%. He's hitting that at Donovan Mitchell, 1.3 makes on 2.6 attempts, 50% clip. He's hitting in wide open threes. Those are the three guys I'm considering.
Guess what? Impromptu draft when we come back.
Boom.